The Warner Brothers studio buildings are reflected on the side of a golden WB emblem that's set in blue skies above. Beneath the emblem are the words, "A Time Warner Company." A horse-drawn cart trundles through the countryside west of Bordeaux. Amongst the sacks that it carries lie 2 9-year-old girls, Gabrielle and her sister Adrienne. Gabrielle clutches a ragdoll tightly to her chest and glances across to her sister, who's sleeping alongside her. Light sparkles through the trees that line the track, gently dappling their faces. And through the branches overhead, letters in a hazy brilliant white form the words, "Audrey Tautou in Coco before Chanel." With Benoît Poelvoorde, Alessandra Nivola, Marie Gillin, and Emmanuel DeVos. A low sun shines weakly in the grey sky. The children are dressed in heavy tweed coats. The cart passes through a walled entrance to an imposing flint-stone, slate-roofed convent. Gabrielle peers through the wooden slats on the side of the cart at the enormous walls. The austere building is bathed in a cold blue light, in contrast to the world outside. It is covered in vine stems that have not yet gained their new leaves. The front of the building is lined with rows of tall rectangular windows. The central panel of each window frame forms a cross. The inner garden is a very plain empty space. The cart draws up outside the front door. A caption reads, "Orphanage at Aubazine, 1893. The girls clamber out of the cart, assisted by nuns in 19th century starched white wimples and dark floor-length robes. Gabrielle stares up at the cart driver expectantly, before being led inside by a nun. The driver lights a cigarette and ignores the girls. On the threshold of the door, Gabrielle turns to look back once more at the driver, who shakes the reins and moves off. The nun pushes Gabrielle inside and closes the door after her. The two girls are then led up a stone staircase and through the dark corridors and cloisters of the orphanage. Gabrielle stares at the huge starched wimples which hide the faces of the nuns. Gabrielle is seated at a long oak table in the refectory. She stares forlornly at her bowl of food. Nuns sit at the high table at the end of the room, overlooking 2 long tables of girls in dark uniforms. 2 girls whisper and laugh at Gabrielle. A nun enters the dormitory where several girls are making their beds.
Girls are visitors. Follow me.
Gabrielle approaches her sleeping sister, Adrienne, and shakes her awake.
Come on. Come on, let's go.
I don't want to.
With a determined expression, Gabrielle walks the length of the dormitory and exits, followed closely by a nun. As they walk along a gloomy corridor, the nun places a hand on Gabrielle's shoulder. They stop outside a room where several girls are dressed in identical red gabardine coats and bonnets. The girls walk out past Gabrielle into a courtyard and run towards 2 horse-drawn coaches. The girls are hugged and kissed affectionately by the waiting adults. With a detached and chagrined look on her face, Gabrielle watches the girls jump up excitedly into the coaches. Gabrielle stands alone, silhouetted in the dark shadows of the cloisters.
J'ai attendu mon père.
I waited for my father every Sunday.
Mais il n'est jamais revenu.
He never came back.
A caption reads, "Moulin 15 years later." Now a beautiful raven-haired young woman, Gabrielle peeps through an opening and a set of stage curtains at a crowded salon of drinkers and prostitutes. Gabrielle and Adrienne step out onto the stage to sing and dance.
J'ai perdu mon pauvre coco, coco mon chien que j'adore, tout près du Trocadéro. Il est loin, s'il court encore, je l'avoue, mon plus grand trait. Dans ma perte si cruelle, c'est que plus mon homme me trompait, plus coco m'était fidèle. Vous n'auriez pas vu coco, coco dans le Trocadéro, coco dans le Trocadéro. Kika, kika, vu coco, et coco, et coco. et Coco.
For Coco.
Have a seat.
Hook is that way. The girls pass around a hat for tips. Is that all I'm worth? Nice of you.
Oh, your Baron's here.
Adrienne bites her lip in excitement.
Coming? Come on, please, he's not alone.
The sisters make their way across the crowded room towards two uniformed cavalry officers.
Bravo.
Darling, this is Etienne Balsan.
That was wonderful. My pleasure.
Gabrielle, Adrian's sister.
Etienne introduces a scantily clad woman.
Fanny, Queen of the Knights.
As they all sit, Etienne points at the sisters.
Not surprised, but who's younger?
Gabrielle.
I can guess your age. How old? 16, 25?
When I'm bored, I feel ancient.
Very clever. How old do you feel now?
1,000 years old.
Pleasant girl. Is she always so blunt?
Aren't you?
Running off?
Etienne grabs his prostitute.
We're drying up. Let's drink.
Good idea.
I'll pour it. Thanks. Champagne for Coco.
Gabrielle.
No. I don't like it. It's too prim. I prefer Coco. Coco sounds...
It is nice.
For a rooster. You have lousy taste.
I like it.
Do you ever speak kindly?
Coco stares at him.
Try saying something nice.
I have nothing to say.
Those dark little eyes.
Coco looks sullenly at Etienne as he nuzzles the prostitute's bosom. Next, Coco and Adrienne sit in prim grey seamstress's uniforms sewing lace petticoats. They have white starched collars and their hair is tied neatly in buns. A man approaches.
Girls, the petticoat is torn. It's urgent.
Adrienne takes the petticoats and inspects them. She finds the tear and sighs heavily.
The frill on the bottom. Here.
She hands them to Coco.
Come on, it's easy.
Please.
Coco reluctantly takes the petticoats and walks over to a sewing machine, where she places the clothing carefully under the needle. Next, the girls lie top to tail in bed, reading.
Done.
Don't tell me the end.
It's always the same thing. Blanche the orphan overcomes obstacles and marries the Prince of Espéjac.
Story of my life.
I hadn't thought of that.
You're mean.
Have you been to India? No. Blanche did to prove she's no gold digger.
You want me to go to India?
Making out with your baron in some rat hole won't get you far.
He loves me. I even met his friend.
It's just showy can get a pretty girl into bed. Love is best in fairy tales.
You have no heart.
The only thing interesting in love is making love. Too bad you need a guy for that.
Coco starts to tickle Adrienne under the covers. Coco sits on the stairs smoking backstage. She's deep in thought. Dancing girls flit back and forth past her. Adrienne approaches.
We're on, Cocorico.
Reluctantly, she stands, drags deeply on the last of her cigarette, and pushes through the stage curtains. As Coco and Adrienne hand round the hat for tips, Etienne drops in a coin.
That was stupendous.
Thank you, Mr. Balsa.
I mean it.
Even the second time?
I missed some nuances the first time. Have a seat.
Adrienne grins knowingly at Coco and leaves her to sit with Etienne.
Did I say something wrong?
She wants to leave us alone, to convert me to the cause of love.
I'd like to help.
So what must I do? Do I blush? Do I play shy? Do I say, oh, please do, honey. Yes, my love.
I like yes, my love. Not bad at all.
A woman in love is helpless, like a begging dog.
Her tongue hanging out. slobbering. Not a pretty sight. Are you nervous?
No.
Yes, you are. Something to drink?
Champagne.
The two sisters later. I was sure it'd be useful. He knows someone at Alcazar. We can audition whenever we want. Paris, here we come.
You find him attractive?
Balzan, with that face.
Liar, I bet you're hooked.
He's not as dumb as the others and has connections. We need a new song. Something more chic. And some money for new dresses. The proprietor.
Good work. He drank 3 bottles. It's not that hard. This way we're all happy.
What do you think? I'll whore around to fill your pockets.
Very well. Violette, you know the Coco song? Well, you sing it now. Beat it. Don't ever come back. You neither.
Good going. How do we get new dresses now?
The sisters enter a dressing room and steal 2 frilly red ball gowns.
You're crazy.
They dash along a dark backstage corridor.
The boss had asked for it. Hurry up.
The sisters stand in front of a mirror, now wearing the stolen dresses.
Je suis femme torpille, pille, pille, je me tortille, tille, tille. En me touchant, faites attention, vous recevrez...
Not good at all. On I'm a torpedo girl, we need something splashy. Try lunging forward. Go on, start over.
Adrienne practices a coquettish dance. Coco reaches for the back of her corset.
What are you doing?
It should be looser at the back.
She undoes the corset fastenings and with a pair of scissors cuts through the tight fabric.
You'll ruin it.
You need some room to be comfortable.
Deftly, Coco rearranges the corset backing and reties the lacing.
Now try.
Adrienne continues her provocative dance, watched by Coco.
Will it hold? It's not a striptease.
You'll grab their attention.
Next, back at the day job at the haberdashers, Coco kneels at a woman's feet, fixing the hem of her coat. Etienne enters the shop.
Good morning, Coco.
Good morning.
Coco looks from the customer to Etienne and her expression hardens.
Like seeing me work on all fours.
This is a nice model. Can we speak? Sorry, I'm in a rush.
The customer sighs tetchily as Coco approaches Etienne.
It was hard to find you. No longer working nights? You have some free time?
She glances nervously at the woman customer.
I have an idea. Think before refusing. How about dinner one night?
Recent convert to the cause of love?
Me? You're not my type.
Good.
Mademoiselle, you're not paid to chit-chat.
So?
Okay.
Very well. See you soon. Mademoiselle, if I may, I find you stunning.
He leaves the shop with a beaming smile. Next, Etienne and Coco dine in a grand restaurant.
What's eating?
I don't like it. I ate lots of it as a kid. Now it sickens me. We were wealthy. Papa speculated in wine.
I thought you were an orphan.
For you, all singers are.
I didn't say that. Your sister told Maurice that you were orphans. I repeat what I hear.
She loves to tug at people's heartstrings. No, in fact, I was Papa's favorite. When Mama died, he went to America. So I have a father. I'm not an orphan.
Being an orphan is no crime. If it were, I'd be rotting in jail. I'm an orphan myself.
Really?
My parents died 2 years ago.
How sad.
A reason to rejoice. I feel alive again. We weren't speaking. It was a complicated family.
Did they hit you?
What?
Did they hit you?
Goodness, no. Why? That would have justified my anger.
Coco sniggers.
In fact, I found them lacking in imagination. Deadly boring.
The aunts who raised me bit me and starved me.
No.
I always hoped Papa would come back.
Poor Coco.
No, why? Kids like you raised with nannies and whatnot end up unhappy or retarded.
Retarded, yes. I couldn't agree more. Look at me, pathetic. I should have met you earlier.
A middle-aged woman approaches. She shakes hands and moves off to her table.
That one, I should have met much later.
Coco sneaks a look at the middle-aged woman.
Too many feathers, too much makeup, too much everything.
How do you see yourself, I mean?
Coco wears her red ball gown.
I look like a whore. My dress for the Alcazar.
She removes a silk flower.
No, the only thing nice about it was the flower. Torpedo girl!
Coco cavorts around a drunken Etienne in his bedroom.
Entrez, messieurs, pour le petit sou. Flambrez comme de la mazou. Allez où? Benzine! Avez-vous vu la grande.
Etienne pulls Coco towards him, kisses her, and pulls the straps of her dress down. Coco sits astride Etienne on the floor and teases him with kisses. Later, Coco walks into the room she shares with Adrienne.
We start next Tuesday. We go on at 10 before the start. Our own dressing room. Our name on the door. And do this, I'm suffocating. The Alcazar. Fame and fortune will be ours. Paris, here we come.
Adrienne casts down her eyes.
Can't sing with you.
What do you mean?
Maurice wants to marry me. We'll be living near Paris.
Coco stares unblinking at her sister.
I'll be a baroness. So no more singing.
Look at me. Barons don't marry girls like us. You're dreaming, Adrienne. You'll sing while we rehearsed.
No, I won't.
They glare at each other.
He knows Mama died and Papa sells pots and pans. That you were abandoned at 9.
I hope you'll forgive me.
Tears well up in Coco's eyes. Next, Coco auditions alone in front of Etienne and another man.
Entrez en avant la musique, messieurs, on ne paie qu'en sortant. Je suis la torpille électrique, c'est merveilleux, c'était pas tant. Quand on me touche, on s'électrise, j'en ai vu des jeunes, des vieux, tomber à mes pieds dans une crise. En me faisant de petits yeux, je suis femme torpille, pille, pille, je me tortille, tille, tille. En me touchant, faites attention, vous recevrez une commotion. C'est fantastique, tique, tique, je suis électrique, tique, tique. Très mature pour de petits sous, flamberai comme de la madou. Et vous, que pensez-vous?
The man gesticulates for the pianist to stop.
Thank you, miss.
Coco looks shocked. Etienne has a look of resignation on his face.
Bonjour.
Etienne enters the shop where Coco works and acknowledges the owner.
May I?
Of course.
He walks through to the back of the shop where Coco and a new seamstress are working.
Ladies?
Bonjour.
You okay, Coco? Forget about the Alcazar.
She looks down dejectedly at her sewing.
I know someone at La Rotonde.
Enough's enough.
Etienne blinks and shuffles from one foot to the other.
I came to say goodbye.
You're leaving?
I'm going home.
You don't live here?
Thank God, no. I owed a few weeks to the army. I'm Parisian, born and bred.
You live in Paris?
I live outside Paris, in Compiègne. Very well. Time for friends to part ways.
Coco smiles affectionately.
I'm glad we met.
Au revoir.
Good luck, Coco.
Coco's colleague watches dumbfounded as Etienne disappears from sight. Then she sneaks a nervous glance at Coco for a reaction. Coco resolutely continues her sewing, then stands and grabs another piece of cloth from a work table. She busies herself as if nothing has happened. She arranges the cloth, pulls cotton thread from a spool, ready for stitching. Then she pauses, looks up and sighs heavily. Next, in her room, she places an empty leather travel bag on her bed. She walks across to a wardrobe and starts to place dresses and blouses over her arm to pack. She fastens her sewing kit and places it in the case. She empties a small tin pot onto the table. The contents of the pot are some franc notes and coins. She picks up the notes only and looks up deep in thought. Next, she sits on her bed. Beside her is the packed case locked and upright. She's dressed in a matching long skirt and tight jacket and a small-brimmed straw hat. In her hands, she tightly clutches a handbag. She stands silently, grasps her bag, and leaves the room. Coco is seated in the back of an open-topped carriage drawn by a single chestnut horse. The carriage speeds along a country road lined with hedgerows. There are open grassy fields and copses as far as the horizon. The carriage is dappled with strips of sunlight filtering through the lush canopy of leaves overhead. Coco looks up from her hands and lifts her face unsmilingly to the sunlight. She concentrates her gaze towards a white brick chateau looming through an opening in the trees. The carriage enters the grounds of a chateau, passing stone planters and trimmed lawns. It stops on a gravel driveway in front of a grand portico with marble pillars.
Merci.
She grabs her case and alights. She looks all around her, at the gardens, the pillars, the driveway. She enters cautiously through a tall door which opens onto a black and white tiled hallway. Beyond is a serene garden. Joseph, a servant in a black frock coat, appears suddenly.
Mademoiselle?
Mr. Balzin, please.
And you are?
Gabrielle, Coco.
Joseph leads Coco outside, across a wide green expanse of open garden to a paddock where Etienne is training a thoroughbred horse.
Good boy.
Monsieur.
He turns around, puzzled.
Coco?
She grins and waves.
What are you doing here?
My sister lives nearby. Surprise visit, but she's out. I remembered you lived around here. Better than the train station.
I was worried you missed me. Joseph, if you put Coco in the floral bedroom. You're here now. Can't lock you out.
Joseph leads Coco up a winding marble staircase and along a tiled corridor lined with expensive furniture, flowers and hunting trophies. He opens a door and stands back for her to enter.
After you.
Coco walks into a bedroom lined with floral motif wallpaper, darkly burnished furniture and paintings. She stares at the antique clock and crystal candle holders on the mantelpiece. There is also a marble bust of a beautiful woman. She opens the door to the bathroom and surveys the scene. Sunlight streams through tall windows, dancing over a marble bath and dressing table. With a smile, she leans back and spreads her arms as she lies fully clothed in the empty, deep bathtub. Having removed her straw hat and coat, she walks slowly into a grand reception room. There are ornate carved furnishings, enormous Chinese vases, and gilt mirrors. She stares at the bookshelves lined with leather-bound volumes. Etienne enters.
You like books? Rest assured, I haven't read any. I want to show you something.
In the hall, Etienne points to a set of paintings.
Coco, I want you to meet my family. Family, this is Coco. Bow down.
She curtsies, he bows low.
My grandfather, founder of the Bolsan dynasty. Great man. The other Gabrielle I knew, before you, Gabrielle Bolsan. No husband, no children, thank God.
You look alike.
How awful. You're right. Remind me to take it down. His name was Patillier, a crook, a cousin. Thank God he died poor.
They continue through the house until Etienne stops at a door.
And this is my bedroom. Don't be shy. The final hurdle.
She hesitates at first, then enters. Etienne studies her figure from behind and follows her in. Next morning, Coco lies in bed smoking and reading The Heart of a Woman. Etienne enters.
Minouche won. The race was incredible. I was very lucky. Washington, not the president, had two false starts, disqualified. That's not all. Night Flight, the favourite, ran off track. They left Minouche, she ran to the finish line, whizzed right by, like a rocket. Am I speaking Chinese? Here, you have to care about horses. Why aren't you ready?
I'd like to stay on.
What about your sister?
I forgot her address.
It's a bit complicated. I have guests. Some other time.
I'll be discreet.
Not my thing. Bluebeard, locking women upstairs.
You won't know I'm here.
Fine. 2 days. No more.
Coco smiles. In the stables, a groom watches as she clumsily attempts to mount a horse.
You should try with the saddle.
I couldn't find one. Can I learn in 2 days?
No way.
She pulls up her long skirt to mount the saddle properly.
This thing is impossible.
Someone may see you.
So what?
I can't let you.
What do I do, kick?
Come back. Pull the reins.
She gallops off across the pastures, chased by the groom. Upon returning later, she strides through the stable yard, loosening her clothes and ripping her corset off. That evening, she descends the staircase, looking inquisitively in the direction of the voices. She listens intently and walks quietly towards the laughter. She peers around a door into the billiard room.
My friends, dinner is served.
Etienne's male guests are in tailcoats and bow ties. The women wear ball gowns. In the kitchens...
See that blonde? Jockeys have it made. Pays to be small and ugly. Monsieur's latest catch is a shrimp.
Joseph, serve the champagne.
Slice some truffles.
Coco sits in the busy kitchen, eating with the staff. She pulls her napkin out of its holder, then turns to Joseph.
This napkin is dirty.
It's yours. Your ring.
My ring? Dirty napkins in a ring?
She looks puzzled. Later, she lies in bed reading. Etienne enters.
It's Bluebeard. Here to claim his due.
He wobbles in drunkenly, looking dishevelled.
Beware. Nothing I say can be used against me. You are magnificent. An angel of absence seen by no one, heard by no one.
Leave me alone.
Where did my little mouse hide? Up in the attic?
Get off.
So boring. You can't imagine. I'm hot. My great-grandfather's cufflinks. And give me the creeps. Help me.
No.
What do you mean?
Come on.
Hold on. Have you ever heard of Japan? Japan?
Obviously.
Have geishas. Ever heard of them? They tend wholly to their men. They wash and dress them. Remove their cufflinks.
Like slaves.
In a way. Come on, get to work. Have to take off my cufflinks. Or else... back to the station. Come on, give me a hand. Little geisha. Who'd abandon this poor creature for so long? Who's my little doll?
He sits astride her and nuzzles her breasts. He removes his jacket.
I'm big. I'm bad. I'm Bluebeard.
A race course in bright sunshine. Stable boys lead their horses around the viewing paddock. There are crowds of men in straw boaters, jackets and ties, and women in long dresses and huge hats, some carrying parasols. With Coco following, Etienne strides purposely through the throngs of people towards the stands.
We'll meet here afterwards.
We're not together?
No, we're not. I'm stuck in the boxes. Do you mind? The lawn is fine, even better. Don't have to listen to the boring gentry folk. I mean it. Dynamite and Magic Dream in the third. They're my horses.
He hands her a clutch of franc notes and disappears into the crowd. Moments later, Coco spots him climbing the steps in the exclusive stands. Coco wanders idly through the press of racegoers, eyeing up their clothes and hats. Many of the women wear wide-brimmed hats, high-necked dresses down to the ground, and white gloves. Coco's eyes linger on their lace collars, pearl necklaces and earrings, their high-piled hairstyles. Suddenly, she recognizes her sister Adrienne from a distance and smiles. Adrienne wears a tight white lace dress and a huge matching hat, gloves and parasol. Coco smiles broadly when she sees the long, cumbersome train attached to the dress. She approaches quietly and lunges for Adrienne's buttocks. Adrienne's indignant shock turns to joy.
I thought you disappeared. Get my letters. Why didn't you answer?
I was sulking.
Why are you here?
I'm with Balzan.
You live with him?
Of course I do. I live in a castle. My own Bertha, big beds, servants fawning over me. I do nothing all day.
This is wonderful. We're neighbours.
How is it going with the Baron?
Very well. We're so in love. We live in the shadows.
He hides you?
No, we're getting married soon. Like my dress. A gift from Maurice.
You must strike up mode, that train.
This style is all the rage in Paris. It'll fit in perfectly up in the boxes.
Look at them, bored out of their wits. Soon they'll kill to dine with us.
Everyone in the stands lurches to their feet for a better look at the horses racing. Back in Etienne's kitchen.
I'm glad you're up. We can say goodbye. Remember the chocolate?
In the basket.
I'm off. You'll be taken to the station.
Coco nods and smiles.
You okay? Throw me a line sometime. Any raspberry jam left? Give some to her. Homegrown. Delicious.
Au revoir.
Etienne exits, leaving Coco staring into her coffee. At the sound of horses, she looks up and sees Etienne kissing the beautiful actress Emilienne before she mounts a horse. Coco watches intently as Emilienne and Etienne chat. He then climbs onto his mount.
Come on, my friends. Let's get going.
Joseph approaches Coco, carrying her valise.
Mademoiselle, your carriage is waiting.
Joseph leads Coco outside and round the house. Two chambermaids walk past, carrying a basket of dirty bed linen. Coco looks lost in thought. Then, as she and Joseph reach the carriage, she stops dead in her tracks.
I won't be going.
She turns and heads quickly back into the house. She opens Etienne's wardrobe and rummages through his hanging suits. Finding the particular patterned cloth she wanted, she then rifles through his shirt drawer. She chooses a starched white, collarless shirt. As she leaves the room, she picks one of Etienne's black neckties off the back of a chair. Facing a mirror, she arranges the tie into a large bow and puts on a waistcoat and riding trousers. She takes out her sewing kit, removes her pair of scissors, and proceeds to snip the ends off the tie. She then rearranges the tie in a smaller bow and checks her image in the mirror. In the shade of some large trees, Etienne and his riding party of ladies are picnicking on a rug. On horseback, Coco spies on them from behind a tree. She then spurs her horse into a gallop towards the party. Etienne sees her and jumps to his feet to grasp her bridle.
I'm sorry. I wanted one last ride. He panicked.
You? On a horse?
I've always ridden. Riding saved me from suicide.
Suicide?
When my aunt used to hit me, I'd go out riding.
You call that riding?
I'm here, aren't I?
You kept your boy hidden?
To no avail.
Etienne reaches up to help Coco off the horse.
Ladies and gentlemen, Coco. Full of surprises, some of them good. Gorgeous costume.
You couldn't afford a riding skirt?
Coco looks nonplussed. She joins the picnic.
I'd be surprised that she lasts, whatever her name is. She's charming but lacking in frivolity. I've eaten too much.
As pretty as ever.
That's kind of you.
Where's your jockey?
Racing. Good riddance.
Already over?
We'll see. He mounts me like a chimp. Even in my dressing room. And like all short men, he's well endowed. It's exhausting. You men are exhausting.
Exhausting perhaps, but indispensable.
That's true. But I may prefer women.
Liar.
You made me laugh.
Emilienne looks at Coco.
Young man, what do you think? What do you prefer? Don't be afraid.
Go ahead.
Say something.
Speak up, say what you think.
Skin is skin.
Well said. How did you decide this?
I shut off the light.
Clever.
Charming.
On this note, allow me to propose a little brandy. And another round.
These Amazon saddles are impractical. She's right. You're very smart, mademoiselle. We get put on top like cherries on a cake.
Emilienne sits awkwardly in the side saddle, trying to rearrange the swathes of cloth of her dress, while Coco sits astride the saddle in practical trousers. The riding party set off back to the chateau. Emilienne looks around Coco's room.
He didn't give you the nicest room. Even Maud had the blue room. You're not his type. Wear a corset, be more feminine.
She picks up Coco's little hat.
This is cute.
Try it on.
Give me a hand.
Coco pulls out the long hairpin and removes Emilienne's white hat.
You're prettier without it.
Merci.
Coco carefully places the hat at a jaunty angle on Emilienne's coiffure. She turns and views herself in the mirror.
I feel totally naked.
You have a forehead, a nose, a mouth.
Where are you?
He can't be left alone for a second. They'll think I can't afford feathers.
Not at all. With this on, how can you think?
Think?
Or is it just an act?
Where did he find you?
Keep it.
What else prevents me from thinking? Go on, tell me. Don't worry, I don't bite.
Coco points at Emilienne's gaudy feathery accessories as Etienne enters.
Get rid of all of this. It's fine for a carnival.
Without some adornments, I'd feel poor.
She's a bit primitive.
Oh, I forgot to tell you. I'll be starring in Joan of Arc.
You? Playing a virgin?
Yes.
In bright sunshine, Coco and Etienne ride through a forest.
Leave some slack. Left, right. Get it? Now let's try to gallop. Close your right eye.
I can't.
So close the left one. Close an eye.
Strange lesson.
It's very important. Keep one eye ready, in case you get mud in the other. Know what I just told you? It's an old Boursin family secret.
I'll become the best rider around.
Could take months, if not years.
So what?
Should have been wary. Sent you back while I still could.
They gallop towards the chateau in the distance. That evening at the chateau, Coco strides down a corridor wearing a long dress, festooned with ornate pink bows and silk flowers. She has a miserable look on her face. She stops for a moment, then turns to look at her dress in a nearby mirror. She twirls to view the bows on the back. In her bedroom, Coco cuts down the length of one of Etienne's shirts. She removes the stiff cuffs and refashions them. She takes pins from a tin and tacks the cuffs to a dark check material to form a collar. Then she comes down the staircase dressed in her new creation as Etienne looks on.
What is this outfit? Where's the dress I gave you?
At my window. I felt like a walking curtain.
Too bad. You almost look feminine.
Disappointed? They'll think I'm a cheap date.
Etienne throws darts at a painting of a woman.
Not bad.
Dear aunt, allow me to pay my respects.
Excellent, Etienne.
Take this, auntie.
Emilienne.
They come less for the actress than for the tarts who ruined this count or that air. No one cares about my acting. It's relaxing, like being a tourist attraction or a monument.
Ever get stage fright?
Yes, but less and less. Not a good sign. Come see the play. We perform every night. Can you make me another hat? The first was a smash hit.
Of course.
By the way, bravo for the length of your stay. You're breaking my record.
Soup's on. Vintage 1882. Worth swooning over.
Coco holds up her glass.
I'm lodging a drunk.
So Balzan found you in a saloon?
Not at all. It was an exclusive cabaret.
She has a marvellous voice.
Really? I'd love to hear you.
Yes, come on, Coco, sing for us. Does anyone know Coco? Come on, sing. Sing.
Go on, we're bored.
Etienne pulls Coco aside.
Make an effort. Make it look like you're having fun. You're here to entertain. So sing. She's accepted your invitation.
Etienne to the pianist.
Do you know Coco? Or else, no more riding, just bread and water.
He gesticulates for her to sing. She looks both mortified and peeved.
J'ai perdu mon pauvre Coco, Coco mon chien que j'adore, tout près du Trocadéro.
The guests smile and nod their heads to the tempo.
Dans ma perte si cruelle, c'est cru que mon monde me trompait, le Coco m'était fidèle.
The guests start to laugh at Coco's singing. Everyone joins in and starts to dance. Coco slaps a man away as he tries to prod her playfully with a riding crop. Late morning. Coco looks out of her bedroom window across the vast expanse of Etienne's estate. Following the music, she wanders downstairs in her cream silk pyjamas. Her hair is unkempt and down over her shoulders, and she's carrying her book. She loiters at the door to the room where a friend of Etienne's, Arthur Capel, sits playing the piano. Feeling her presence, he turns and stares at Coco for several long moments. He's handsome, perhaps in his late 20s. His hair is fair and neatly parted, and he has a moustache. Coco turns away and wanders off towards the library. Arthur follows a few seconds later. He sees Coco lying on a chaise longue, engrossed in her book.
Can I see?
She sits up suddenly.
Your book.
Even stupid books have some truth to them.
Think what the other books can teach you.
Etienne enters the library.
I was looking for you. I knew I'd find you here.
Books are meant to be read, aren't they?
And horses to be mounted. Come on. Get dressed.
As Arthur reluctantly follows Etienne, he places a well-thumbed book he's been holding down on the table next to Coco. The title of the book is System of Economical Contradictions, or The Philosophy of Misery. At the door, he turns to face Coco.
You're elegant.
Coco remains motionless, then reaches out to take the book. Next, Coco, Etienne, Arthur and the others are playing polo with considerable skill. Coco is the only woman playing. She's dressed in a short cropped riding jacket and waistcoat, blouse, tie and jodhpurs. Etienne watches intently as Arthur and Coco smile and chat with each other. Next, Coco is in the stables grooming her horse. Arthur enters.
Nothing scares you. What's your name?
Gabrielle.
but everyone calls me Coco.
They call me Boy. But in England, I'm Arthur Capel. The problem with nicknames is that they stick.
You're stuck with it.
My father used to call me Coco. He'd wake me up shouting cock-a-doodle-doo. It soon became Coco-doodle, and it stuck.
Coco twitches as Etienne enters the stables.
A big number at the saloon. Nice choice, right? Her Coco, mi Rico, Coco Rico. Am I interrupting?
I was admiring her style.
Ha, her style. Don't overdo it, or I'll lose my tailor. She likes dresses with no corsets, shoes with no heels, hats with no feathers. That's my Coco.
You're right to opt for simplicity.
You think so? I like things when they overflow. No meat on these bones.
Stop it.
No, I disagree.
You're right. Her look is rather pleasant.
Stick to your horse dung.
She storms off. Evening. Coco lies in bed, fidgeting with her nails.
Are you sick?
No.
So be nice. Get up, get dressed, and come downstairs. They're all waiting.
Good for them.
What's wrong, Coco?
I hate entertaining your degenerates.
I'm tired of your mood swings.
The Lord of the Men is tired. What's new?
Don't use that tone.
I'll speak as I please.
Just shut up.
You're the boar. Without your money, you'd lose your friends.
Okay. Forget it. Come down when you're calm.
I'll never calm down. What do you think? Play with your rich scions, dumb jockeys and whores. All I do is perfect my gallop and screw up drunk.
The gate's open. You're not forced to stay.
At the theatre, Coco watches Emilienne perform.
When people see us, I know they wonder, how can this elegant woman love such a fat man?
I'm not that fat. I'm losing weight at the moment.
Yes, but you're not very attractive.
I'm kind.
You're more than that. You're understanding, talented, charming. Such is my dilemma. My lover is more like my husband.
After the performance, Coco winds her way through the auditorium and the crowd to Emilienne's dressing room. She's wearing her trademark small-brimmed hat, fitted jacket and white blouse.
Okay, let me think. You're not shapely, but you're attractive and amusing. There's Romain Nouville, great family, cultivated. He'll show you around, get you out of the stables. Who's this? But he's not much fun. I know a duke also, on the old side, but generous.
I want to work. To make a living. To be an actress.
You're too old to be an ingenue. And work, what a strange idea.
You're famous, you know people. You can find me something.
Something. What did you do before Balzan?
Nothing, some sewing.
That's easy enough to do in Paris. Not a bad idea. You're talented. Everyone loves your straw hats. You can work at a hat shop.
I don't want to.
You want, but you don't know what.
Emilienne, help.
Does Balzan know your plans?
Coco shakes her head.
Hurry back to the castle. Tell him I asked you to come here. Don't tell him you want to leave. Tighter.
Her assistant tightens Emilienne's corset.
Don't take it badly. Balzan is easygoing. You're lucky. Make the most of it.
Lucky.
Next morning, Coco arrives back at the chateau in a horse-drawn carriage. Etienne and friends are having breakfast al fresco. At the sound of horses' hooves, Etienne turns and meets Coco's intense gaze. Somewhat warily, Coco descends from the carriage, valise in hand. She walks towards the men's table. Joseph sets another chair for her. All the men rise from their seats in deference, except Etienne. Arthur smiles, obviously pleased at her return to the chateau. Etienne glances at her disdainfully, then back at his newspaper.
Bonjour.
Hungry? Muffins. Perfectly tasteless. The English adore them. Boy, what about all that coal you had me buy? Because with all due respect, war is brewing.
I hope so. I'll resell it for a fortune.
Buying coal?
I think Mr. Capel would do anything to become England's leading businessman. Sell my coal. I pay you well.
Without his advice, I'd have to work like Monleur.
Monleur, what a clod. Work is a vile word.
Worse ways to make a living.
Yes, but none are more tiring. The breeder from Cardiff. Let's go. Coming?
I'll join you.
You'd better, because my English is shoddy, and Heart of Darkness is a horse for me. By the way, don't frighten her. She has the annoying habit of vanishing.
The other men disappear, leaving Arthur and Coco alone at the breakfast table. A servant fusses around them, clearing the table. A light breeze wafts the table linen and discarded newspapers. Arthur places his napkin on the table and stands. He takes hold of an elegant silver coffee pot and pours Coco a cup.
I was afraid I'd never see you again.
Coco regards him somewhat coldly, not a ripple of emotion across her face.
Aren't you happy here?
You should go. It seems you're indispensable.
Why won't you answer?
If I had to answer every question... Do you work or just pretend to?
You tell me.
No one works here.
Perhaps I'd like to have pretended. I had no choice. My mother was lacking a little something. So my father would marry her. An aristocratic name, as you say in France. I was raised by foreign hands.
She glances up at Arthur.
Don't make that face. Do I seem unhappy? Otherwise I'd never have read a book, travelled, or learned anything. But perhaps you'd like me more.
In her room, Coco chalks a cutting pattern along a piece of dark cloth, then starts to cut along the freehand drawn lines. Utterly absorbed in her work, she deftly pins a round-edged white collar to a straight dark dress modelled by Emilienne.
It's too austere. You asked for orphan garb. What do you know? Orphans wear rags. Poor things are half naked. Rip my dress a bit. Please. You're no fun. The point is to see thighs, breasts.
It's more exciting to imagine them.
Stubborn as an ass.
Her sister Adrienne enters with Etienne. Adrienne smiles at Emilienne.
You're beautiful. It's nice to see you. How do I look?
Plain.
Who wants to be plain? This is a disaster.
Evening at a costume ball. Men and women are wearing outlandish robes and high-powdered wigs. Coco, in contrast, is dressed in a black top hat and tails with a white dress shirt with long cuffs. She sidles up to Etienne.
Still the boy?
Less is orienting for you.
I stuck to horse, though.
Emilienne rushes over.
Can you fix this? It's too baggy.
It's to let you move about.
I can feel my fat jiggling inside. I want it tighter.
You'd prefer not to breathe.
She has an answer for everything.
Coco gazes across the crowd to Arthur, who's dressed as a pirate, and chatting to a gaudily dressed female. Adrienne appears at Coco's side and follows her gaze.
Good-looking pirate.
Coco smiles subtly. Arthur looks over, wearing a gold earring and eye patch. Later, Coco sits outside, away from the crowd, smoking. Arthur joins her.
Hello.
Coco is startled to see him. He smiles and draws closer.
Captain John Rackham.
What can I do for you?
Nothing.
As she makes to walk off, he places a hand on her shoulder.
I don't believe in your happiness.
All I need is a job. You must have one with all that coal.
Nothing really suited for a woman.
What's the point in being a businessman?
To impress you?
Who do you think you are?
She walks away in a huff, leaving Arthur staring longingly at her.
I've caught one!
Indoors, the lights have been extinguished for a wild party game. Etienne is chasing after the women guests. Coco looks on from the sidelines, completely unmoved by the spectacle. The lights come up. She and Arthur exchange furtive glances. The lights dim again. In the game, Etienne chases and captures a woman. The lights come up again.
Caught one!
He peels back her robe to reveal her heaving bosom. Then he kneels and buries his head underneath her long dress. The lights go out again, and Coco makes a beeline for the door. As the lights come up, Adrienne is caught by Maurice.
Caught one! And what a catch!
A man chases Emilienne towards Coco.
Stop, Hubert, I'm not playing, that's enough. It's a dormitory here, so quiet. You are right, my orphan outfit drives them wild.
Hey, have you been in love?
It never made me happy.
What is it like? What do you feel? Good, bad, what?
Where did you come from? What's it like to be in love? It hurts, 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 doesn't it?
Outside, Arthur walks away from the house. Coco appears behind him.
What are you doing?
I'm leaving.
But the game's not over.
I have no business here.
You do. Balson is counting on you.
You know exactly why I'm here.
You can't go off in the night. At least wait till daybreak.
Good night, Gabrielle.
With a furtive glance back at the house, she sneaks after him.
Stay a bit.
Why should I?
She smiles enigmatically at him. Meanwhile, the party game spills out into the night as the guests flee into the dark garden. Away from the crowd, Arthur caresses Coco's shoulders and the nape of her neck. Slowly, she turns to face him. His hands come up to stroke her face and neck gently. He holds her head in his hands. He leans forward slowly to kiss her on the lips. Their kisses become more passionate as they embrace one another. Arthur attempts to undress Coco, pulling at her waistcoat and shirt with difficulty.
I'm not used to undressing boys.
Eventually, he manages to pull back the shirt down over her back. Early the following morning, Arthur and Coco lie curled up in their jackets, asleep under the wide branches of a tree. In the distance in front of the chateau, a number of guests are still cavorting as a servant clears up the debris from the party. Arthur rises on one elbow to gaze at the sleeping Coco. He strokes her hair softly. Etienne sits in the garden, smoking ruminatively. The lone figure of Arthur approaches through the trees.
Look who it is.
Arthur smiles, arms spread wide.
Let's have some coffee. Where's your eye patch?
I lost it in a brawl.
My friend, you missed a wild game of hide-and-go-seek. Emeline was great. She bit a servant. Seen Coco by any chance? She hid so well, I never found her.
Does she often disappear?
Nope. It's rather recent.
Are you fond of her?
Since when do you care?
Since yesterday.
She's a charming companion. Very pleasant.
Mind if I borrow her for a few days?
Like her that much?
I like her.
Does she want to go with you?
I think so.
Then be my guest. It'll clear her head.
Arthur and Coco speed through the Normandy countryside in an open-topped car. Past fields upon fields of corn stalks, they turn along a narrow cliff path. Hundreds of feet below, the shadows of the cliffs dance on the blue-green surface of the sea. Arthur wraps an arm around Coco as she leans into him. The car pulls into Deauville on the coast. They park outside a rather grand hotel facing the sea. Arm in arm, they proceed into the lobby, followed by a liveried bellboy. The bellboy escorts them into their bright, airy room, where Arthur tips him for bringing up their travel bags.
Merci.
Coco is silhouetted on the balcony, against the hazy backdrop of the channel. She smiles playfully, gazing down at the sea. Arthur strolls along the promenade, looking around him, searching. Suddenly he stops and sees Coco. Coco stands, ramrod straight, on a boardwalk, looking out to the sea. Her trim figure and classic straw boating hat mark her out from the other women in billowing dresses with ribbons and plumed bonnets, who are promenading by. Arthur smiles ruefully and walks up to her along the boardwalk over the sand. A faint smile plays on her lips as he sidles up to her.
First time I've seen the sea.
They link arms and walk among the crowd. Coco's disapproving gaze lingers on a group of women's heavy bejeweled necklaces.
Showing off her silverware. Her dress is so tight she'll split in two.
The woman moves in an ungainly fashion under swathes of fabric.
Does meringue on their heads. Like being in a pastry shop. I'm embarrassed for them.
You're an anarchist.
A good sense of distaste.
You didn't make that up.
It's Jules Renard. New Reading Abbots.
Tonight, we'll go dancing at the casino.
You don't mind being seen with me?
What a strange idea.
I don't have a dress for that.
Make a more elegant version of this one.
What about a colour that's really a colour?
They enter a dressmaker's, where Coco looks at a bolt of jet black cloth.
This is perfect.
The fabric is even more beautiful in pink. Better suited for your complexion.
Only black shows off the eyes.
The tailor nods. She looks around and spies another dark fabric.
I'll take this lace too.
Perfect.
Make the neckline 10 centimetres lower, and no corset.
Without a corset, it'll be shapeless. In that case, add a belt.
She glances at Arthur, who grins.
Do as I say.
Very well.
In the ballroom at the casino, men in elegant tailcoats and white bow ties waltz with women in diaphanous gowns, tiaras and long gloves. In the midst of the twirling couples, Arthur gracefully leads Coco in a waltz. She wears a plain but very chic black flowing long dress. They both smile and laugh.
Every woman's looking at you.
No, they're looking at you.
She shakes her head and laughs. In contrast to the other women, her makeup is very subtle and her neckline is completely unadorned. Early morning on the shoreline, a group of fishermen haul in their nets and beach their catch. Still in their evening wear, Arthur and Coco stroll contentedly along the sand towards the fishermen. As the fishermen work their nets, Coco stares intently at their clothing, striped blue and white Breton shirts and blue-black working trousers. The men drag the heavy nets behind them, out of the shallows onto the sands. A broad smile appears on Coco's face. She pulls Arthur closer, and they continue their stroll along the wet sands. The wind whips Coco's black hair around her face as Arthur drives along the beach at speed. The car is now parked facing the sea. The hood is up, and heavy rain falls in the soft sunlight. Both Arthur and Coco are in the back seat, hugging each other and kissing passionately. He rips off his shirt and kisses her neck. The car is now parked on the gravel drive to Etienne's chateau. Arthur and Coco stand at the front door kissing. Coco smiles broadly and makes to enter the house. Arthur pulls her back towards him.
I'll kidnap you as soon as I return.
They kiss once more and part company. At the pillared doorway, she turns and smiles at him. She wears a blue fisherman's blouson over her white shirt. She disappears into the dark interior. As Arthur opens his car door, Etienne appears on the scene.
Not even saying goodbye? Real race car. May I?
Go ahead.
Etienne sits in the driver's seat and grips the steering wheel.
Impressive.
Careful, you may get hooked.
How was the trip? Did you enjoy yourselves? What did you do? Thought you were a very busy man.
Worried?
No, not worried. I cleared my head. She may not seem it, but she's fragile. Don't play games with her.
I know.
Does she know?
Arthur's jaw tightens and his expression hardens. Etienne walks away.
Etienne. It's up to me to tell her.
Etienne and Coco at home.
Charming scene, isn't it? You with your hats. Me watching. Peaceful image of a happy couple. To think you were off with another man. How was Deauville?
Nice. Especially the sea.
What did you do?
We went dancing. He's not ashamed of me.
In England, we danced with the Queen.
I saw fishermen hauling in their nets. Men in blue with their shiny catches.
I'll take you to the sea. Show you real fishing.
You never leave your castle.
You're wrong. I love the sea. Not so long ago, I harpooned a shark from an old boat in England.
I don't believe you at all.
Ask him.
Boy?
4 years ago, to be precise.
What was he like?
Not handsome, but charming.
Not you. Him.
Irresistible, of course. We were all very jealous. Stole our mistresses. But always with such elegance. It's what we like about English charm. Elegance.
Was he often in love?
No. But they were. It led to some awful scenes. You have the trail of broken hearts. France, England, wherever there was an ocean, a sea. I don't know why, but whenever he gets infatuated, he takes a girl to the seaside. Strange, isn't it?
You're jealous.
Terribly so.
Coco rides along a country road in the back of an open-topped carriage. The carriage draws up to a large pink-bricked house where Coco alights. She looks over the unfamiliar building just as her sister Adrienne comes out to greet her.
What are you doing here?
I had to see you.
Come in. So, what's so important?
In the love room, remember why Blanche travels the world?
She loved the prince?
Exactly.
No, not you.
I don't know what's gotten into me. I feel so stupid. I want to get married.
What do his folks say?
He's a self-made man.
You're lucky.
You've never been prettier.
Adrienne casts her eyes down sadly.
Maurice's folks won't meet me. Not over their dead bodies.
So let them die.
The smile disappears as Adrienne grows serious once more. Back at the chateau, Etienne leads a blindfolded Coco down stone steps into the garden.
Almost there. Careful.
They stop, and Etienne removes a piece of cloth around Coco's eyes.
It's yours.
Coco takes a deep breath.
It's the love of your life.
Exactly.
Standing before them, held by a stable hand, is a jet-black thoroughbred stallion. Mm-hmm. Evening. Coco enters Etienne's bedroom.
I can't take Snow White.
Of course you can.
I'm leaving.
Sorry, too. I'm smiling because I let the fox into the coop.
But my moodiness tires you.
Don't rush into this.
What's gotten into you? You used to lock me in a closet.
I was a total idiot.
She climbs onto his bed and holds his hand affectionately.
This is your home. You live in England?
I guess so.
You don't know?
There or elsewhere.
For better or for worse?
One way of putting it.
It hurts a bit, all the same. Is that normal?
You'll get over it.
Of course. In fact, no. I don't want you to leave. I'm afraid. Afraid you'll be unhappy. Afraid you'll suddenly lose everything.
Why do you say that?
It's not for me to tell you. Boy is marrying an English woman.
That's nonsense.
Marrying for money. He was born a bastard and she's rich. Her father was an English coal magnate. I'm sorry, Coco.
She gets up from his bed.
What made me think you had become a gentleman?
She storms off. Etienne looks saddened. He drags himself out of bed and heads for Coco's room. Door is locked.
Open up. Open up, please. Forget what I told you.
Coco.
I'm sorry. Open up.
In the hazy light at dusk, Coco stands alone in the vast garden before the chateau. daylight, a carriage pulls up to the chateau carrying Emilienne and another woman. Emilienne holds a large hat box. Both women wear Coco's inspired small-brimmed top hats. They enter the house and mount the stairs. Coco meets them in her room. She's wearing the striped Breton shirt.
Very chic in that stripe thing, darling. This is Sophie from the Follies. She can't believe a wild child makes my hats. She's willing to spend a fortune for one. I said the chances were slim, but we brought you a few models just in case. What do you think?
Coco sips coffee in the chateau's bustling kitchen. Etienne enters.
We're in the garden. Coming?
I'll join you.
Take your time.
She nods very slightly, and as he walks out of the room, she finishes her drink. She leaves the kitchen and enters the hallway, but hesitates on her way out to the garden. She blinks and slowly turns around to look up the staircase to the next floor. She mounts the stairs cautiously. She walks towards the music. Arthur sits at the piano. He sees her enter the room and smiles. She sits next to him on the piano stool.
Bonjour.
Hello, Gabrielle.
She strokes his face tenderly and he holds her hand.
What's your country like?
Vast, green, grey, very rainy.
Coco chuckles to herself.
What's on your mind?
My sister.
Beautiful woman.
For what it's worth, she still thinks her baron will marry her.
They're in love. Maybe they don't need to get married.
She leans back and looks at him warily.
That's usually how it works.
It has nothing to do with love. Marriage is more of a social convention.
So why did Balzan ask me to marry him?
You can't.
Why not? I had a chief social status.
If you marry him, you give up everything.
Riding horses and entertaining guests.
No. An exceptional future awaits you.
You and your big words.
You're like no one else. You have to trust yourself.
Anyway, I don't intend to marry him. I always knew I'd be no one's wife. Not even yours. It's just that sometimes I forget. My mother was an idiot. She married for love. And cried her whole life. My father cheated on her constantly. She'd sit up waiting, night after night. One morning he came home and she was there in bed. In fact, she was dead. Better mistress than a wife. The worst thing in marriage is the couple. Are you shocked?
He averts his gaze and swallows hard, then turns to face Coco.
I'm getting married.
Congratulations.
She's English. The daughter of...
I know.
Nothing between us will change.
How wrong you are.
Tears well up in her eyes. In the garden, Coco lies at the foot of a tree on a bed of fallen brown leaves. She stares unblinkingly up at the sky. Her chest rises and falls as she struggles to keep her breathing under control. She sighs heavily and closes her eyes. Etienne plays billiards with Arthur.
Not playing?
Arthur, suddenly roused from his thoughts, chalks his cue. Arthur looks up and sees Coco lurking in the dark hallway. She enters.
Here she is.
I'm moving to Paris.
What will you do there?
Make my fortune.
Can we know? What great idea will make us rich and famous?
I'll design hats.
Excellent idea. You can do it here. I'll pay your expenses.
Hats for your girlfriends would make me rich.
Can't expect to work. Makes no sense. What do you think?
I think she's right.
Etienne smirks and raises his eyebrows.
Over in England, you may make women work, but here, there's still a semblance of gallantry. She can't even add.
She'll learn.
She has no money. What about that?
I'll get by. I'll borrow some.
Stop filling her head with ideas. I'll marry you. Solve all your problems. Make all the hats you want. I'll confront my family of barbarians.
She looks across the table at Arthur. His expression remains impassive.
I have no intention of marrying anyone.
Etienne glances over to Arthur, who stares back unflinching.
At least it's clear.
Etienne leaves the room. Arthur turns towards Coco as she looks down and fidgets with her hands. He closes the distance between them and perches on the billiard table next to her.
The money you need. I'll give it to you.
I'll ruin you.
I'm not so sure.
In the darkening evening light, Etienne puts his beloved stallion through its paces in the paddock. Coco watches. She draws closer to Etienne. They look each other straight in the eye.
So it's decided. You're abandoning me.
You'll come visit. I'll miss you.
Me too. What will I do without you?
I'm frightened.
His hand gently caresses her cheek and they embrace tightly. In her haberdashery studio, Coco adds the finishing touches to a hat, a cigarette hanging from her lips. She takes the black feathered hat from its stand and carries it to where Emilienne stands expectantly. She positions the hat carefully on her head, all the while making tiny adjustments. Satisfied, she steps back and admires her creation. Emilienne turns to face a floor-length mirror. Coco walks to a table where there is a collection of hats on stands. She takes another black hat and fits it on Sophie's head. Adrienne passes her a black silk bow. Emilienne looks towards the door.
Look, a gentleman.
Arthur pauses at the threshold of the door to the studio. Emilienne smiles slyly. He then turns away and mounts the stairs. Coco breaks off from her intricate work and turns to Adrienne.
Finish out.
She climbs the stairs, a subtle smile on her face. She enters a room darkened by the heavy drapes at the window. She looks around, searching for Arthur. Suddenly, he springs from the shadows and embraces her. They kiss passionately. They start to remove each other's clothing.
It's so easy to undress you.
Coco's blouse and skirt fall to the floor. Later, as they lie in bed, Arthur stares off into the distance as Coco strokes his cheek.
See you later.
Stay.
Emilienne's hats aren't ready.
I'm getting sick of your hats.
Leave less and you'd see me more.
He leaps out of bed, rushes up behind her and sweeps her off her feet. He throws her back onto the bed and kisses her. Later, in a grand restaurant, Coco sits smoking with Arthur.
I may have found the house.
Where is it?
Near Cannes, not far from the sea. I'm seeing it tomorrow.
Oysters, madame?
Mademoiselle.
A two-month rental.
2 months? I can't believe it. We'll fight like hell.
I'll take the risk.
Arthur glances across the room as a woman enters wearing a stylish black hat.
One of your hats?
Coco steals a look. The woman smiles and nods slightly.
The rent's on me.
I thought I gave you a toy. I gave you your freedom.
You could have married a celebrity instead of a lady in a dusty old castle. We would have been happy.
Because we're not?
Her expression freezes in a resigned smile. After dinner, they head towards his waiting car.
Go on, try it.
Out of the question.
I need your opinion. Get behind the wheel.
Snowflakes float down and stick to the gleaming windscreen of his open-top sports car. She shuffles over to the driver's seat and gently accelerates. The car weaves lazy S's along a wide snow-frosted boulevard, punctuated by pools of light from the street lamps.
Brake! Brake! You'll kill us!
Not bad.
You need one yourself, with a driver.
Okay, I'll buy one.
Let's wait. I'm not sure we have enough in the bank.
We? I made that money in the bank. It's mine.
They give you money because I acted as guarantor.
So I depend on you?
For the time being.
She gets out of the car in a huff, followed closely by Arthur.
Gabrielle.
Starting tomorrow, I will be negotiating with the bank.
Proud people breed sad sorrows for themselves.
I don't understand.
You're too proud. You're going to suffer.
She lies in bed, smoking and reading.
Bodily labour lessens the pains of the mind. This is what makes poor people happy. Poor people happy. An invention of the rich.
Great. Now you're ready for Nietzsche.
She giggles.
Did you take my blue polo shirt?
She goes to find his shirt.
You know the difference between us? I'm a man, You're a woman. Men and women dress differently.
She appears holding the polo shirt she's altered to fit her.
Couldn't you leave this one alone? I can get them only in England.
What's the material?
Jersey.
You're impossible.
She hugs him from behind as he bends over to pack his valise.
Help me, or I'll never get out of here.
She smiles warmly at him as he picks up his bags. At the door, he turns to her and smiles. Coco hurries down the spiral stairs in her millinery shop towards the front door. In her white silk pyjamas and dark blue silk dressing gown, she rushes out across the street to where Arthur sits in his car. Arthur looks up, surprised, as she gets into the car.
Why the wait? Let's get going.
I have to go.
Start her up. I'm sick of seeing you leave. This time I'm coming.
In that outfit? I'll be back tomorrow. Then 2 months just for us. 60 days. 60 nights.
She strokes his cheek and they kiss. She smiles lovingly at him, then reluctantly opens the car door and gets out.
You will regret not taking me along.
He smiles in farewell and accelerates off down the street. She watches him drive off, then, still smiling, she turns back to the millinery shop. In a dark auditorium, Coco sits next to Etienne, watching Emilienne on stage in another theatre production.
Save your saliva, I know what's coming. I got groped.
Yes, you got groped.
It's so dreadfully predictable. First I act like a girl, then you say I'm a beast, then you break something. Speaking of which, I recommend this vase. You almost broke it one night 6 weeks ago. It's ready and waiting. You reverse the order. Finally, a change in the programme.
Enough. Don't exasperate me. You misbehaved.
Next comes Dirty Beast.
You've acted...
like a girl.
Coco looks disapprovingly as Emilienne's hat works loose. She leaves the auditorium and moments later appears at the side of the stage to fix her hat.
This hat still stays in place. Now maybe you'll overact less.
As for the man in question, if I held my tongue, it's because I have my reasons.
Etienne and Coco.
Theatre is such a bore. Why did you cut your hair?
It got on my way.
You know the saying? A woman who cuts her hair is about to change her life.
The audience spills out through corridors into the theatre lobby. Adrienne suddenly appears, pushing against the flow of people towards a smiling Coco and Etienne.
Will you dine with me?
I'd love to.
Adrienne stands before them, tears welling up in her eyes. Coco's smile freezes.
Boy had a car accident. Is he in the hospital?
Adrienne shakes her head. Coco looks down, her brow knitted in confusion. Etienne wraps an arm around her shoulders as she remains rooted to the spot. Nighttime. Headlights illuminate green roadside ditches as Etienne drives Coco along a country road. The faint light picks out Coco's face in profile. Her eyes are cast down and her expression is one of shock and sadness. The car speeds along a wet country road, sending up showers of spray in the thin grey light of dawn. They slow down as they approach a sharp bend, watched by two waiting gendarmes. The car comes to a halt. Etienne and Coco stare out through the windscreen. Etienne slowly turns to face Coco. She turns to face Etienne. They both then look out of the window once more and get out of the car. On the bend, black tire tracks cut across the grass verge and the tarmac. Arthur's sports car lies on its side in the ditch. Holding her emotions in check, Coco slowly begins to walk towards the car. Suddenly, her hand goes up to her mouth and she begins to weep. Etienne lingers at his car door, watching Coco intently. She stumbles slightly but does not shift her gaze from the upended car. She stops, bows her head, and cries. A pair of hands spread a bolt of black cloth on a cutting table. With practiced dexterity, the hands chalk lines along the cloth. Coco begins to tack a piece of black lace over cream cloth. Her hair is tied back and she wears a tight black woolen top. With a cigarette dangling from the side of her mouth, she pins the material to her mannequin, making minor adjustments to the fitting with her scissors. Then she sews her trademark small curved white collar to the dress. She sits at her desk, smoking and scrutinizing a piece of crimson lace cloth in her hands. She lets the cloth fall, inhales deeply on her cigarette, and exhales ruminatively. The expression on her face remains unmoved for a moment. Then she rests her head in her hands, closes her eyes, and begins to weep. She spreads another bolt of cloth over her workbench. This time it's a subtle shade of cherry blossom pink. Her fingers scrunch and work the cloth into pleats. Between her hands, she pulls and stretches a piece of checked woolen material. She wraps it round the lower half of a mannequin like a skirt. Her concentration is absorbed by her delicate and intricate work on the mannequin. She experiments with different cloths and patterns. She kneels at the feet of a young woman in a pink dress, trimming the lace hem. Women mill around behind her, fitting dresses to models, sewing details onto outfits. Next, a group of tall models parade past her as she leans nonchalantly against a mirrored pillar, smoking. The models make their way gracefully down a staircase. They wear Coco's new creations. Shimmering evening wear, boxed shoulder black and white jackets, halter top dresses. Their hairstyles are short, neat, and tied back off their faces. Coco stands midway on the staircase, carefully scrutinizing each girl as she descends. She is dressed in a white boxed jacket, and a matching skirt with black trim. As the models make their way to the stage, Coco sits on the stairs to watch. More statuesque models appear on the stairs. Some wear high-collared shirts and bow ties, fitted jackets and trouser suits. Others wear short lacy dresses, black tights and flat shoes. One model appears in a white fur stole and matching cap. The women in the front row of the fashion show whisper to each other and point towards the catwalk. Coco stares out icily over the stage. A vision appears of her dancing with Arthur. They both smile and twirl around the floor. Another vision of her stepping out onto the stage, about to sing to drunken revelers. Coco watches steely-faced and disinterested as Etienne and his wild guests cavort and dance. Next, she's smoking backstage before going back out to sing. As a young woman, she peeks out through the stage curtains again, scanning the crowd of drunks and prostitutes. Back at the fashion show, the models and audience all applaud Coco. She sits motionless on the stairs, staring at the crowd. She gazes down at the crowd with a look of detachment. Then she sighs, breathes in deeply, and smiles. Coco Chanel never married. She worked until her death one Sunday in January 1971. Over a career spanning 60 years, from Paris to the world, her designs came to define style and elegance for generations of women, famous and unknown. Ahead of her time, she broke into a man's world, founding an empire that still bears her name.